I would like to ask that Jeff Tom give our CCB legislative report, being that he is the director of our governmental affairs for volunteering. And we're very fortunate that Jeff is giving us this time, and I've seen how effective he's been there at the state capitol. So please, let's give Jeff Tom a hand.
Thank you. So I'm going to try, if we have a mic runner, I'd rather have this a little bit interactive, because people forget questions, so we'll see how this works. But if you have a question about a particular topic that I have covered, raise a hand, and then they'll tell me that there's a question, and we'll get your question, because otherwise people do forget. And we're going to be going fairly quickly from one topic to another. So, all right, first, it was a fairly quiet year in Sacramento, and that's really a good thing, because for once, the state fiscal situation was pretty good. That's the first time that we can really say that in a number of years. We didn't have any major cuts that were made this year, other than a few cuts that the feds caused because of sequestration. But other than that, the state did well due to the cuts that were made in previous years and the additional tax money for education purposes. Things are stable, and we would hope that they will be stable again next year, although I haven't seen the Department of Finance's forecasts. In fact, there were even some areas where there were some additional budget allocations that were added, and one of those we were involved in, we're proud to say, was there was a big reduction about 4 or 5 years ago of money that went to disabled student services programs at community colleges, about a 40% reduction. And a chunk of that, roughly 25% of that reduction, we got back this year for the future. So that's looking good. I think the fight is going to go on to get more. But the fact that we made as much as we did in a real broadly based effort with a lot of folks involved, including our own members, that really speaks volumes. The legislature did listen. Let me go on to a few bills question? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, and make sure it's on the topic that I'm discussing or I'm going to rule you out of order, so.
Jeff? Well, sorry.
Yeah.
Jeff, there's going to be an initiative on the ballot next June having to do with funding for schools. Is that correct?
I don't know, to be quite honest.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if that's going to affect disabled students funding.
Yeah, no, I do not know. Not that I have heard, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't. But I haven't heard that. Okay. First bill I want to mention, and I'm going to give a little history here because this is kind of interesting. AB 1003, which is a bill by Alejo. But before I get to the bill, we had a resolution that Steve Mendelson came to us with a couple of years ago and said, basically the resolution said, governors, you need to appoint more judges who are blind or visually impaired or have other disabilities. And so, interestingly enough, we passed that resolution and not much happened with it. And then all of a sudden, and I want to shout out to Gigi DeMarie, who at Capitol Day, and one of the visits she and her cohorts made, came to me and said, hey, there's this bill by Mr. Alejo that seeks to collect data on members and appointees on the judiciary who, on the basis of their disability or their veteran status. And so because of Capitol Day, we were able to hear about that bill, and we then supported it, and it made its way through the legislature and was signed by the governor. So soon we will start collecting that data. And having that data, I think, is going to be important. That data is already collected with respect to other minority groups, and I think it's important because it will give us more information and the ability to say, hey, we need, you know, you need to do better, or you're doing great, or whatever. So, you know, I think that's going to help us. Let's move on to AB 133 by Mr. Hagman. This was really a victory that a number of people, including your president, helped to create. There was a bill wherein proposed educational materials that were being proposed by either the State Board of Education or to a school district would have to be put into digital format. So we came up with some amendments that said, well, this digital format, when you use it, has to be accessible to screen reading technology. So we got ignored, and we got ignored, and we, you know, finally they were just doing whatever they could to give us basically the brush off. And through some push by me and some real push by Donna and some help by her state senator, we got an edge back in the door. And I actually think, and I have no reason to think otherwise, that what had happened was that between the aide and the sponsor, they didn't even tell the assembly person, the author, that we were really interested in getting these amendments through. Sometimes the legislators will use that as an excuse, but I happen to think in this case they were actually telling the truth. When we finally got to the assembly person, he was, you know, this isn't a bad idea. It sailed right on through. We got the amendments just like we wanted, and we got it into the bill. So sometimes if you keep pushing and you don't give up, you can get what you want. And we made a friend out of that assemblyman because we wrote in support of the bill to the governor. And the bill did get signed. So I think it was a win-win situation all the way around. So you're not always that lucky, but sometimes, you know, you are, with a little persistence. AB 459, this is the latest in the round of bills on healthy foods at state buildings for vending facilities. It requires ultimately 100% of healthy foods and beverages be used. It was, and again, largely through the efforts of Assemblymember Gatto, who is chair of state of the Assembly Appropriations Committee, and who attended our LA Mudstrut, we are proud to say, that bill was bottled up and did not pass. However, it is, it has till January 30th to get past its first house, being the assembly, so it could still be brought up. And, you know, vendors are going to need to, form coalitions of both people who are on their side and perhaps with people who aren't, to work on this issue. It's not an issue that's going to go away, and it's a very complex issue. And so it's one we'll obviously be watching closely in the future. Let me move to an update on what was called the Duals Demonstration Pilot Projects and is now called Cal MediConnect. Cal MediConnect is basically a set of pilot projects that the federal government has approved, wherein those who are eligible for both Medi-Cal and Medicare will be enrolled in, although they can opt out under Medicare, but for their Medi-Cal services they can't, they will be enrolled in managed care plans. This will be happening no earlier than April of 2014 in 8 counties. They are Alameda, Santa Clara, and San Mateo up in the Bay Area. And down here you have Riverside, San Bernardino, L.A., Orange, and San Diego. So it does have a real impact down in Southern California. And the vast majority of the recipients are going to be in Southern California. I'm pleased to say, and I can't tell you that, you know, how much impact we had, but I know we fought for it because it wasn't always going to be this way. And Donna made sure that we worked really hard to put our oar in, that there are four optional services that the managed care plans that will have to provide. They were optional under Medi-Cal, but they're going to have to provide it under the pilot project. And one of them is vision services. So that's a victory. And you know, we've been involved. We've worked hard in a coalition that has on long-term care services and supports. And as a part of that coalition, I think not only have we had some impact, but we've also learned a lot about issues too. And so it's been a win-win, another win-win for us. Okay. Let me move to, it's also going to impact the IHSS program because in those eight counties and just those counties, in-home supportive services will be provided through the managed care plans. Now, you'll still get to have your own provider, and they can't reduce your hours. Conceivably, they could increase them, and we'll see whether over time that's the sort of thing that happens. I mean, the hoped-for goal of these managed care pilot projects is that the plans will see that they can save money by giving more community-based services as opposed to, having people in, you know, nursing homes and other institutional settings. Whether that will come to fruition or whether it'll just be a mechanism to save the state and federal government money is something that we just don't know yet, and we won't know, for a while yet. We're still working with CalMediConnect on the issue of making sure that we get materials out in accessible formats. We seem to take about two steps forward and then a step back on it. But we are pushing hard. We've had a lot of help from some people, including a former director of the Department of Rehabilitation, Brenda Primo. And so we are really working to ensure that what didn't happen when everybody else on Medi-Cal went to managed care does happen when the CalMediConnect starts, and that is that people can get enrollment materials in accessible formats of their choice. Okay, let me turn to the in-home supportive services program, but this in this case in general. Okay, we have a question.
Jeff, this is Charlene. Mm-hmm. You said there was four optional services.
Yes.
And you mentioned two. What are the other
ones? I mentioned one. Nutrition is one of them. Multi-service, MSSP is a third one, which is a group of services for seniors, and in which there's a limited number of slots, so I don't really know what's going to happen with that. And then, and I cannot remember off the top of my head the fourth one. I think it's community-based assistance, which deals with essentially what used to be adult day health care, I think is actually the fourth one. Okay.
Yeah.
Turning to the IHSS program, we have had for a long time issues with respect to essentially nothing being provided in accessible formats. One issue revolves around the fact that timesheets, which have to be filled out, and which are filled out by the provider and signed by the recipient, are not in an accessible format, so that you can't really read what you're signing, and so you have to take it on faith. So we want to work on that issue next year. We also want to work on the fact that you can't get the notices. Let's say they notify you that your hours are being reduced or eliminated or whatever. And that can happen for a variety of reasons and has happened with respect to these cuts recently. those have not been provided in accessible formats, and that's an issue that we really need to work on this year. It's been kicking around. The other issue with respect to IHSS, and is one that we're going to have a resolution on Sunday to present to you, is reintroduction of our bill on the issue of requiring that reading mail documents, having them completed, is part of the mix of IHSS services. We've tried several times. We got as far as a governor's veto the last time, so it made it all the way through. And this, and we really have very widespread support for this. I mean, you should see how many times this issue gets mentioned, and I don't even need to mention it anymore. Everybody else is. So this will be like our third or fourth time, I think, trying to do this. So, that's right. Never give up, I heard out there, and that's exactly right. Well, I think we will approach Mr. Bell. You know, give him first chance of refusal, right, since he did it last time. He was in the assembly at that time. He's now in the Senate from Rogers District, I believe. Oh, okay, well, close. Oh, okay, he's in Susan Hyatt's district, I guess. Okay. Guide dog issues. SB 308 by Mr. Price was a bill that extended various boards, and one of those was the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. It extended that board from, it would have terminated January 1 next year, and it gave it a 4-year extension. It also extended provisions for the arbitration of disputes between handlers and schools over custody and use of their dogs. It's really unfortunate, and this is something that the board has said as well, that these provisions seem to be, they're used very rarely. I think most people don't know about them well enough, and I know that the board wants to make sure that people do, because it's really a good avenue if there are instances where problems exist, to meet and confer on these issues. Another guide dog bill, it isn't a guide dog bill. It's a restaurant code bill. I'm going to go back to my former hat as a legislative council attorney for a second and tell you a little bit about the restaurant industry. This is not said in either good or bad, pejoratively or not, but one thing that's kind of interesting about the restaurant industry is in some industries they do a lot of it by regulation. Some agency comes in and they enact a bunch of regulations. But for some reason or other, maybe it's historical, the restaurant industry does a ton of their stuff by legislation. And you get these huge bills every few years that, you know, they're called retail food facilities, and that includes restaurants and food carts and other things. And they have just, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of sections in these bills. So they had another one of those this year, and I'm glad I don't have to write them anymore or edit them or, you know, whatever. But they did have one this year, AB 1252, and it had a provision in it which redefined service animal, relatively speaking, in accordance with the Federal Department of Justice regulations, which limits service animals to dogs, and only dogs individually trained to do work or perform tasks for the benefit of a person with a disability. And that's a great change. And so I think, I think everybody in this room hopefully would agree that that's really something that really benefits those with service animals, and most especially those with guide dogs, because of the backlash that has begun to surface at the, you know, fraudulent use of animals in service dog contexts. Let me finish with one bill, and then if there are any questions or anything else, we'll take them. And that is a bill, SB 1492. This is a bill that we discussed quite heavily in our Governmental Affairs Committee, and we have not taken a position. It is a very complicated bill with a lot of provisions in it. Basically, it increases in some areas with a number of limitations as well, but it increases the scope of practice of optometrists. And of course, you know, this, you can debate this forever and ever, but it always ends up in, and I'm not trying to say one is right and one is wrong, but it always is a huge turf battle between the, you know, optometrists who say, look, we're already doing most of this, we know how to do it, and the ophthalmologists who say, no, you're causing safety issues and you shouldn't be doing our stuff. And so we don't, you know, it's hard to say who's right, and it could be that one is very much more right than the other, but it is a very difficult bill for the layperson to understand, and really, you know, come to grips with. And, you know, it's one that, you know, who knows, if it sticks around next year and does go anywhere, someone might come back to this organization and ask to take a position. And, because it certainly is a bill that it is important, is very important to, you know, those of us with visual impairments. Okay, that is it, for my report. I wanted to sort of go through it, fairly quickly. And are there any questions? Yeah. All right. I'm just crying over here.
I think he said bad words, and he said L.A. lost and Cardinals win.
Yes.
I can barely contain the tears.
I feel your sincerity.
Yeah, thank you. The question is, it's Frank Mitchell, Bayview chapter. On the accessibility, go back to that accessibility bill, how will that be accessible? Is it going to be through the school district? Because the school districts, in our experience, have been very, very ill-educated, ill-informed as to what services are available and how they're supposed to provide them.
Okay, let me explain what this is about. School districts are required to make things accessible, not that they do it, but they're required to do that. The problem is enforcing your rights. No, this is not, this doesn't have to do with that. This is when somebody, some group, some entity, some person comes to a school district and submits it as a proposal to the school district, and the school board is going to consider it for acceptance as a material to be used by the district or by the state. And this says it's got to be put into a digital format when it's going to be proposed. And so now what the bill says is that the digital format it's going to be put into has to be accessible. So this shouldn't be as big of a problem. I mean, even the publishers finally bought off on it. They didn't like it at first because, you know, they don't like anything that they have to comply with. But even they realized in the end that they really have the tools to do it in most cases. And so this shouldn't be a real issue.
The question, though, is it's there. It's how do we get the students to receive this information? Is it going to be through, like, California school?
Well, that's a separate issue. I mean, that applies to anybody who wants to find out what those districts are considering. I mean, you got to look on their website, or you got to do whatever means they use. But that applies equally to, you know, a sighted person as it does to a blind person. And that's just an issue of being part of your educational community, you know, so.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? All right, well, thank you very much, and I look forward to, I did forget one thing. We'll certainly be discussing, and we'll have our governmental affairs meeting tomorrow afternoon. I invite you to come to that. We'll be discussing, you know, the future next year. We have some issues that we'll be discussing there that I didn't get into here. you know, we'll be discussing, you know, the possibilities of Capital Day and what we want to recommend to the board about that for the future. That's always a issue that has some complications to it, but this year's was very successful. And so, you know, I invite you to come to Governmental Affairs, and you don't have to be a committee member to engage in our discussion. So with that, thank you very much.
Jeff, do you want to get the room location?
Governmental Affairs room location.
You would ask me that. La Jolla, I think.
Okay. I just would like to mention just something, and it falls under governmental affairs, and something that Jeff and the committee has worked on, and it strays over a little bit into the CAT a little bit. And Jeff, I do definitely want you to jump in on this, but we was brought to our, you may recall at the last conference and convention that the organization passed a resolution about cycle tracks. And there was a bill that Assemblyman Philip Ting from San Francisco had introduced, which is a two-year bill, and it's a placeholder bill, and it probably, hopefully, knock on wood, not become anything. But it's just an example of, like Jeff was talking about the restaurant industry, the bicycle lobbyists, advocates, they are trying the same thing as the restaurant industry and trying to get what should be regulations that's supposed to go through the California Traffic Devices Control Committee and for the cycle tracks and other experimental type of bicycle lanes. And I'm telling you this because you need to be really alert in your local communities, because the locals are sneaking this in to see about these things where there'll be more shared pathways or these cycle tracks where the bicycle lane will be sandwiched between the on-street parking and the sidewalk. And it's and you have to cross this, depending, it could be from 5 feet to 8 feet of a bicycle lane to get from the car to the sidewalk. And the thing is, they, I think, were surprised when we went to the state capitol and in person and also by phone and actually objected to it and got the attention, I think, of the legislative person's office on this thing. And I sit, represent this organization on Caltrans ADA Task Force. Well, it's an official Universal Design Committee. I think that's the new name of it. And it seems that they're so quickly sneaking us through. Not all Caltrans knows about this. We took the staff, the ADA compliance staff, did not know anything about this legislation, nor did they know that another part of the Caltrans was being pressured and issuing experimental designs that no one seems to get their hands on, but the bicycle people seem to have there. So I guess I want to say that there's a very long shot, I believe, that this two-year bill may actually materialize, come back again in January. But we need to hear the governmental affairs and the CAT. If you hear anything locally in your communities about the bicyclists pushing for these types of bicycle lanes, they are becoming, they're even the advocates, bicycle advocates, are now really pushing on four-year school campuses for them to legitimize them to be on pedestrian sidewalks. And some shared, and sometimes it could be going at 15 miles an hour be permitted. So I'm just saying that this is legislation, but at the same time, this is a regulatory and access thing. So keep us informed about anything that you might hear, because they are pretty well organized, and We even had consultants on from back in Chicago and Colorado trying to convince us that we had nothing to worry about. So,
thank you,
Jeff,
Gene.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, just briefly I do. And you know, thank you for your leadership. You know, Donna and I and yourself were on these. We were sort of the lone wolves in the wilderness along with one other disability advocate out there. The unfortunate part, and this is the only note I will add, and then if Donna wants to say anything, is that unfortunately the sad part is the reason they probably aren't going to use the bill is because they think they already have the authority to do what they want to do anyway. So, you be prepared, as Gene has said, to see these local projects be proposed. The bicycle advocates, really think they have all that they need to get it done. And so they're going to push when they can. So.
Mike's
getting a mic to you.
In San Jose, that's already happening.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Yeah, because they put the bicycle lane in between the parking and the street. In some ways, it's good, but in some ways, it's not, because people who have bicycles are not using that. They're using the street. I mean, they're using the sidewalks. And some of them, they go real fast. And usually when I'm in the opposite direction, sometimes in the same direction. And, I mean, I can understand why the city did that. But at the same time, I don't know why I didn't talk to people in our chapter about this. It just never dawned on me. And it wasn't until recently that I've noticed that it's a big problem, because some of the streets where I live are one-way streets, and some of them have that bicycle lane, and then some don't. And they don't always do that, because on the streets that don't, it's really crazy.
Yeah, they were very proud talking about San Jose, San Francisco, and other communities, and it's popped up Long Beach and Santa Cruz. It is popping up all over around the nation, and the thing is, there isn't even much open, well, it meets all the requirements, but it just doesn't get advertised, so the general public is aware of it. They're quickly pushing this through, and they are politically, they are so well organized that they have the elected officials and your Department of Transportation or Public Works actually in fear. And I mean, that sounds like a strong word, but it's fear of the consequences of going against this population. So, not to go any further on it, but just saying, and I appreciate letting us know about that, San Jose, and just the rest of you, keep us informed, because in January, this may be something Jeff finds out, that this legislation is going to be used for something, and we need to be prepared and know what's going on. So thank you very much, and thank you, Jeff, for your report. And I guess, do we need to, get a motion to accept your report?
So moved.
Second. Okay, discussions. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions. Thank you.